Sorry for my tardiness. As usual, I talk a little too much when I sign, and we did a lightning signing.
The lightning signing.
Yeah.
So the man who signs the lightning.
So, Dan.
Hi.
This is our podcast.
This is our podcast.
Are we going to have, like, this time of you just sitting there entertaining the audience at the start of the actual podcast?
At the part of the actual podcast? I hope so, because I already used my food heist on them.
Oh, did you?
I don't have another one.
Oh, that's awesome.
I have two food heists.
Everyone's going to know.
And that was the first one.
When they watch the episode, just how late I am. What are we talking about?
You guys are going to see the exact precise level of professionalism. Say professionalism for me.
You just said it just perfectly.
That we bring to every episode of this show.
No, here's
which is
the thing.
This. What are we going to talk about
we
today?
We talked about a bunch of things to talk about here, but they're like for television shows and things we watched. And we can't give spoilers to this audience, right? Like, if you're listening to a podcast and you haven't watched the show that we're going to talk about, you can self-select and to turn it off, but you all showed up here in the
yeah.
audience. We don't want to cast you out. So we spent genuinely a ton of time. Oh, we got...
Oh! This is very nice.
Becky's
thank you.
Getting clapped for. We spent a ton of time.
I didn't know we had drink services.
We spent like 3 minutes talking about things.
Which is so much time.
So much time.
For us.
For us, yeah. So
he could have written a whole book in that time.
What if we talked about book signings?
Book signings?
Yeah.
Okay.
What was your first experience with book signing?
My first experience with a book signing.
Yeah. Very first time you ever signed anything. Was it at the Buca di Beppo? Is that like your first official signature?
Probably. I don't remember, but it's probably that.
We used to go to, like, Buca di Beppo. It's like the place with the Pope's head on a table or whatever. We would go there whenever any of us had, like, a book get finished.
Yeah.
And then we started selling books, and we're like, I guess we'll still keep going to the Buca di Beppo. We haven't done this in years, but
no.
I was the first of us to sell a book, wasn't
mm-hmm.
I? And then, no... Yeah, I was the first
you
to sell
Elantris.
I sold Elantris. And so we went, and that's how you got number one of Elantris. And that's the first book that I ever signed.
Yeah, I think that I sold a short story before you sold Elantris.
Yeah, and
but
Eric,
I sold it to the magazine that we were the editors of. Under a pseudonym, and I did not get paid for it. So,
yeah,
sold.
Eric James Stone had obviously done a bunch of stuff before
yeah,
any of us sold
yeah, he's way more successful than we are.
Yeah. So that's the first book I signed for you. My first book mm-hmm. signing. Do you remember it? Because you were there.
Where was it?
It was at the Borders.
Oh, yeah.
In Provo.
Whatever, the River yeah, Bottoms.
River Bottoms. Is that Orem or is that Provo?
That's Provo. North Provo.
Yeah. So there's this Borders there back before Borders died. And it was, you may have heard this story before, because I showed up to do my signing. Nobody was there except three or four of my buddies. Dan and Ben were there, you know, the usual suspects. Good for you for supporting me. But then
woo-hoo.
They found on the shelf signed Neil Gaiman books, and they all left me. They all went over and cooed over Neil Gaiman books, and they went and bought copies of, like, it was like a Nancy Boys or something that had just been shipped signed. And
mm-hmm.
so my small crowd of, like, four people all vanished.
Yeah.
At my very first book signing.
Four people, like, you stack the deck when you're breaking in, and you're like, everyone who knows me, please come to this signing. I shouldn't say when you're breaking in, because I had a signing Saturday, and I still brought, like, six friends with me. There were eight people there.
Mm.
But, yeah, I didn't have to stay long at your signing, because I already had one. Because the day Elantris came out, I went to some bookstore and I got a copy and I went to his house and said, here, sign this. And it says, my first signed book ever. And then he looked at me and said, my mom doesn't even have one. Why do you get the first one?
That was at Buca di Beppo. I remember
that. Was
that
at Buca?
Yeah.
I thought you it came to your
it
house.
To Buca. No,
okay.
I think you brought it to Buca. I remember signing out on the pavement in the parking
oh,
lot.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
On the way in. You're like, here it is. And then I numbered it number
enjoy.
One.
Enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, by the way, that first book Brandon Sanderson ever signed, I'm pretty sure is worth more than my house. And so it is I don't even have it in my possession anymore. We gave it to Scar, who's our security guy, and was like, here, guard this with your life.
I came up with a cool thing.
Okay.
I came up with what we'll call Scar's team. They're the Scartial Forces. Isn't that great?
The Scartial Forces.
Yes, the Scartial Forces.
I love it.
So,
okay.
you know, Scar is the leader of the Scartial Forces. How bad would it be for me to write that into Stormlight 5?
That Scar from Bridge 4
yes.
forms like a wet work team.
Called the Scartial Forces.
Called the Scartial Forces. I love it. They're all cheering because they want to be in Scartial Forces now. Yeah.
Best book signing you've had and worst book signing you've had?
Okay, so the best book signing I've ever had. So people keep telling me, I don't know if they tell him because he's Brandon Sanderson, but they tell me that we come across as really bougie on our show. Do we come across as really bougie on our show? Yeah.
I do.
We totally do.
Yeah.
So in my case, my sister-in-law was like, you're really bougie because you were making fun of Cheesecake Factory. And I'm like, that's where your bar is?
Cheesecake Factory does have a bar usually.
Do they? Well, then that is where the bar is. So speaking of bougie, my best signing ever was in Buenos Aires in Argentina at their international book fair. We had something like 2,000 people, and we just closed the place down, which I know is like a common experience for you. For me, it was very fun to be like the last person in the convention center, and the security guys were tapping their foot ready to throw us out. It was hours and hours and hours. It was awesome.
So my best, I'm going to give it a tie. So the largest is probably this convention. I don't know if it counts.
Okay.
Right? Like, this is the largest, but I'll only be able to get to about probably half the books. We're trying to add more lightning signings in future years and figure out how I can get to more. But we're thinking I can only get to about 2,000, 2,500 of the books. And so I have had signings bigger, but I don't think I signed more books than that because like some of the early release parties got to like 2,000 or 3,000, but I would start signing and those signings would go until 5 or 6 a.m. And
wow.
It was kind of like my endurance versus the endurance of the people who wanted to get books signed, right? And the 2,000 or 3,000 shrink across the hours and get smaller and smaller and smaller. And so I usually go at about 100 people an hour. And if I'm getting done at like, you know, 5 a.m. and we started at about 10, then that's only 700 people. And so I'll beat that here because we're doing the lightning signings. But I want to highlight the signing that Steve Diamond set up for me.
Walden Books?
At Walden Books, Christmas time, 2006. I'd done like 3 or 4 signings by that point. And most of them had been like when I went and my friends were there. And, you know, we said, yay, it's a book signing. And then I sat by the door like a used car salesman and asked everybody who walked in the door if they liked fantasy novels. And if so, I tried to show my book on them, right? Did
yes.
anyone here get a book from me during those days where I was sitting by the door at a bookstore and had to, like, you know, cold call you, essentially? Was there one? Did somebody scream? Yeah,
like
we got
a
one.
Salvation Army Santa Claus.
Yeah. Oh, we got one. There we are. Thank you so much for saying yes.
You see this? He was one of Brandon's earliest fans, and now he has to stand behind a pillar. That's how he treats his fans.
You know, that's how you'd treat yours if you had any.
Oh, burn. Hey, speaking of nothing, actually, speaking of Steve Diamond, where's my daughter? Borg, go check my phone and see if Steve Diamond is trying to reach me. Because he doesn't have a ticket to this con, and I said I'd get him in anyway. But my phone's in my booth, so go figure that out.
Steve Diamond.
Help me subvert the process, Morgan.
He worked at the Walden Books in Provo.
It was, at the time, under his guidance, the most successful Walden Books in the entire country.
Yep. We just called him Bookstore Guy, and what happened is he managed to get an article about me in the local newspaper back when people read newspapers.
Yeah. And you younger members of the audience don't know what newspapers are.
Newspapers were these things. They killed trees, and then
you wrap fish in them.
Yeah. And I didn't know that this was even happening, the thing about my signing and stuff. And he'd been hand-selling the book because he loved it. He'd been hand-selling it for like 6 months. And I showed up expecting nobody. And there were 70 people in line, which for like most authors, like even successful authors,
that's 70 people, huge. 70 people at a bookstore signing is massive.
You don't understand, like getting people out to bookstore signings, particularly in the days before social media, like getting 70 people, I still sometimes have signings of around 70 to 90 people. The word doesn't get out and it's like at the wrong time and things like that. We still occasionally have signings like that. And so 70 people for a brand new author, I was like, what happened? And it was Steve Diamond. And I still remember that. And he took my class the next year and sat in the back and made fun of me the whole year.
Let me tell you my Steve Diamond story, okay? Mm-hmm. So I would take him to conventions because if you're trying to break in as an author and you want to impress an editor or a publisher, the best possible thing you can say is, hi, I'm Dan Wells. This is my friend Steve Diamond. He manages the best-selling Walden books in the country, right? So that was my line. That was my pickup line for editors. We went to Worldcon in Denver, and Steve and I went together, and I had already sold my book at that point. It wasn't out yet. And I was introducing him to my German editor, Karsten. And I was like, now I get to return the favor to Steve. I've already sold to this man, but I'm going to introduce Steve to him to help Steve. And I walked up and I said, hi, this is my friend Steve. And then I realized, oh, Walden Books has gone out of business at this point, like as an entity. He does not manage one anymore. And so I was trying to think of something else to say. And what came out of my mouth was, he used to be important. So, if you meet Steve, say, didn't you used to be important? He loves it. Mm. It will not make him angry at all.
I did put him in one of my books. He's in yours too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you read Steelheart and you run across Diamond, that's Steve. So you can have him sign his page in Steelheart if you want. He's a good guy.
I killed him in Serial Killer
yep.
or Mr. Monster.
That's what
two.
Happens when you end up in a Dan book is you
yeah,
get murdered.
Yeah, you die in it. Mm-hmm.
For those who don't know, by the way, this is how our podcast started. We were going to conventions and people said, let's just put Dan and Brandon on a panel together. They'll find something to talk about. And
yeah.
so.
This was like 6 or 7 years ago at FanX, which is Salt Lake Comic Con here?
Yeah.
Or was it longer ago than that?
It might have been a little longer. We've been doing this for a long time.
So
Dan, we're old. Do you guys notice that Dan's beard came in completely white? It didn't used to be that way, like just like before he shaved it like a couple years ago. Well, I am young and dashing with still some brown in my beard.
Yeah, he's older than me, by the way. Mm. When I look at people my age who still have like nice dark beards, the other day I was talking to Scar, actually, and I said, why is it that you have a dark beard and I'm completely gray, like an old, tired man? And then I stopped myself and said, oh, it's because you didn't raise Ethan. My son, Ethan, he's awesome and wonderful, and he listens to this show all the time. But I love him, and he's, anyway, he's a mess. He used to be a mess. He's fantastic now.
I mean, I always tell that he drove a car off a cliff story, but he also, didn't he puncture?
He drove my car off of a cliff into the neighbor's pool. When he was 12,
yep.
he stabbed our air conditioner.
That's what it was, yeah.
Have I not told this story
you
before?
You have multiple times, but there's people here who don't listen to the podcast.
Yeah.
They want to hear the story.
You want to hear this? So here's the shortest version of both stories, okay? I was on the Writing Excuses cruise. It's a writing retreat we do on a cruise ship.
I was there with you.
In international waters, sailing around, no phone service at all. And then I get home, or not home, but we pull into shore in Jamaica, because I'm bougie. And then my phone tethers to a cell tower, and I get like 50 texts all in a row. And of course, you see them in reverse order. So I saw the very last one first, which said, so anyway, we were able to stand the tree up and pull the car out of the pool. And I'm like, what happened? And so anyway, a tree got knocked down. So my neighbors stood it back up and they tied it with guy wires to see if they could keep it alive, and they did. And the following year, when my son was 13, we were out doing spring cleaning and yard work and stuff. The tree has grown strong and mighty in this time, which means that those guy wires holding it up were very, very tight. So my wife, who is amazing and brilliant, but did this anyway, handed him a knife and said, cut these wires loose and get them off the tree. It can stand on its own now. And he did. And then he looked at the knife and he looked at our air conditioner and he thought, I bet this would fit right there in that vent. And so he did. And then he came into my, I was inside cleaning up the big like toy room. And he came into the house and he said, Dad, the air conditioner is making a really loud, scary noise. And I was thinking like, oh, it probably just started cycling while you were standing next to it. You're fine. And he backed into a corner, literally like this, like a praying mantis. And he stood there. And then he said, let me rephrase. I stabbed our air conditioner. It is spraying fluid and making a loud, scary noise. And I'm like, oh, okay. Let me go deal with this problem. And I went outside, and indeed, there was, I don't know if you're familiar with air conditioners, the stuff that sprays out when you stab them. Raise your hand if you've stabbed an air conditioner before. It's toxic. And so I got everyone away, and I called like an HVAC guy and said, hey, I need a new air conditioner, probably. I don't know. What do you typically do when someone stabs an air conditioner? And he's like, that's a new one. And he had me read the little like VIN number or whatever it is. It's probably not a VIN number unless you can drive your air conditioner. And he said, oh, well, the good news is that model is so old that we can't replace the fluid in it. And I'm like, how on earth is that good news? And he said, well, it means that the stuff we put in your new one won't be toxic. And I'm like, okay. It's like a very Hollywood perception of what good news is. So yeah, that's my son. He's great. He's gonna be so excited. I'm talking about him on the show.
Again.
My daughter is gonna be really mad that I'm not talking about her on the show, but I don't think she listens to it, so that's fine.
So worst book signing. Just talked a lot. I'll talk about mine. You can
talk about
yours.
Your worst book signing.
So it's hard to rival the book signings when you're just starting out, right?
Yes.
Like, once you get going, even if you have a bad book signing, it's hard for it to be worse than some of these early signings. And my worst book signing ever was in Logan, Utah. And it was in one of the mall stores. It was either a B. Dalton or a Walden Books back when those were still around.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened is we arrived. I was on tour with Dave. We were doing one of our big driving tours. Anyone see me on the big driving tours with Dave, like at Mysterious Galaxy and
stuff?
This would
be Dave Wolverton.
Dave Wolverton. This was back, way back in 2007.
In prehistory.
In prehistory. And we show up. Tell me if you've had this happen. You show up and you say, hey, we're the authors. We're here for the signing. And this bookstore employee's eyes go. And then you're like, uh-oh. And then the book employee says, let me talk to my manager. And then, of course, they don't know you're coming. And these are all supposed to be arranged by the publicist.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere along the chain of going from publicist to head of, like, Walden Books to regional to bookstore, the line got lost. So even though it was, like, on the official thing and it was on the website for Walden Books or whatever, when we got there, they didn't know. Now, you might say, oh, well, that's okay, right? I mean, they can very quickly get things going for you and have your book signing. They didn't have books. It's hard to have a book signing when there are no books, right? And this is
good
why
it's... Good business tip.
Yeah. This is why it's worse than other signings, because with something like this, you show up and there are only a few people there, but they had come expecting to buy the new book and they couldn't. So you had to turn people away who wanted to buy books, which is excruciating. And then you have to sit there for 2 hours normally what you would do is you would hand sell books, right? Like I'd say, used car salesman, by the door. Do you like fantasy novels? I've got one for you. At least it's something to do with your time because you've promised the few fans that are out there that you will be there for those 2 hours. And so you don't want to leave at like 8:45 if someone's rushing to get there and you've said you'll be there till 9. So you have to sit in that chair behind a thing that says author and then not sell any books to anyone who asks you about your books because they don't have any, just in case someone shows up with a book they want signed. It's miserable.
Yeah. That happened to me in Sacramento at a Sacramento Barnes & Noble. And I showed up and was like, hey, I'm here for the signing. And they're like, what? We don't have any signing scheduled today. And this store actually had a sign in their window so I could point at it and go, are you having that signing today? And they're like, sure, let me find some chairs. But
it was
same
you
thing, no
in
books.
The window?
Yeah.
Okay, they had your name in
yeah.
the window.
And my face.
And your face. Because Barnes & Noble usually has your face.
Yeah, they make a little poster.
Yeah.
Over here in the tour booth, Alexis Sarla is there. She was my publicist at the time. She had done her work. She had sent them all the stuff. They hung up the sign.
And then you showed up and they said no signing today?
They didn't think they had one. I was able to show them evidence otherwise. And I had two friends there and my aunt. So three people showed up to the signing and we just went out to lunch, I think.
Yeah. And here's the thing. You hear us talk about the low numbers. If you're a starting out author, don't panic. Like, if you go to a signing, your first signing, and there's almost no one there, part of the point, in fact, I would say more important than having fans there, it's great when the fans show up, by the way, but more important is that you are meeting the bookstore staff.
Yes.
And you are, usually they'll have you sign some of the stock that gets sent there. The publisher, very optimistically, will send often like 50 books or, you know, 300 books. If you're someone they expect to sell 70, they'll send 300, right? With the whole goal being that you'll sign a big chunk of those and then they'll make a nice display. And here's the secret, at any bookstore you walk into, all of the displays are paid space. You have to pay to get your book. If you go in there and they're like, new beach reads on a little sign and things, it's not that like some employee there is like, oh, I think these would be great beach books. No, it's because the publishers all went to Barnes & Noble and said, hey, can we buy some space? And they're like, yeah, we'll have beach reads. Is your book a beach read? And they're like, it physically is possible for you to read this on the beach. And they'll be like, that works. And they'll try to theme it a little bit like that. But everything, yeah. Like on the shelves, there's only a couple things in the whole bookstore that are not paid space. The regular shelves and the new release shelf. Usually the new release shelf, if you go to that, you're not paid to get there. You're just naturally put on it. But the end caps, which is the end mm-hmm. of like a bookshelf, anything that has a little poster, the big stand-ups that you'll get that have, you know, a bunch of the books, the publisher pays essentially get them in there. They call it co-op. It's not paid, it's just that every book sold, the bookstore gets a higher percentage. So it is like paying. So anyway, getting that space is really tough, but they usually do have like a couple tables that they have at their discretion. And if they've had a book signing, they'll take one of those tables, they'll arrange your books really nicely, it'll sign books on them, and it's space you didn't have to pay for. And so going on a tour for a dozen cities, even as a new author who's selling 5 books or 10 books at a signing, you meet the staff. You, hopefully, the staff thinks you're eloquent and interesting. They give you a nice display. And then for a couple of weeks, your books are out there at the front of the bookstore. And hopefully people are finding them and buying them.
Even more than eloquent and interesting, you want the staff to think you're friendly. Because if they like you, then they're going to hand sell your books. I went to Mysterious Galaxy in San Diego.
Yeah, one of the
one
best
of my early ones. One of the very best bookstores in the world. And while I was there, I was signing, you know, my own stuff. And then I said, hey, do you have any Brandon Sanderson books I could sign? And the dude was like, why would I let you sign Brandon Sanderson books? And then the manager was like, oh, no, absolutely. He can sign them all if he wants. And I'm like, no, I'll just sign one. And then halfway through signing, I was like, wait a minute. What if somebody comes in here and they don't know who I am and they're looking for a Brandon book and they get pissed off about it? And the bookseller said, if someone's in this store, they're gonna know who you are. And that's what you want from a bookseller. So thank you, everyone here. Raise your hand if you're a bookseller.
Yeah.
None. Okay. Yeah, no, booksellers.
I saw a couple.
We love booksellers very much. The other unpaid space in a bookstore is staff picks.
Yep.
And that's one of the very best places to find books.
If you find one of those little things that says staff pick, as far as I know, none of those are ever paid.
Yeah.
It's just the staff has put that little card up of their own avail. You find that more at indie bookstores and things like that, but yeah.
But sometimes Barnes & Noble have them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because then you know that the book's on the shelf because somebody loved it. Not because somebody paid for it to be there.
So, Dan, I signed a Mr. Monster in my signing right over there.
I signed a Tress earlier today.
What do you do when you sign someone else's books? Because I edit the title.
Oh.
So, I wrote, it's Mr. Monster. I said, Mr. Monster is a very friendly guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just add to the title. Give it a subtitle.
That's
right?
Good. That's nicer than what I do, which is just cross out your name. And write mine. So there's one copy of Tress written by Dan Wells.
And there's one Mr. Monster where Mr. Monster's actually
a friendly guy.
A very nice guy. Yeah, yeah. Very, very friendly.
The
very
cat monster. Lives in that one.
Yeah. You guys are laughing uncomfortably. You should be. Mr. Monster is, yeah.
One of the things that is always true about Dan, like this is going to be on my tombstone. Dan Wells, 1977 through 2025, he hates your cat.
He hates his cats, too.
I don't have any anymore.
Oh, did you kill them?
No, I would never admit that publicly.
I do like cats a lot, and he would get cats, and I'd be like, oh, they're so cute and fluffy. He's like, yeah, we lock them outside and kick them when we walk by.
I've never kicked a cat. Mm. My characters kick cats all the time. Just kidding, only once.
So, are we doing two episodes in an hour?
We think we have 2 hours, don't we?
We have 2 hours.
Do we have five?
Do we have 2 hours? All right, we will chat a little longer, we'll have a break, and we will be not offended at all if you want to sneak out and have a bio break or something, then we'll do another one of these. So I guess these are double-length episodes.
Fun. No,
extra length episodes.
Remember what we were saying about professionalism?
Professionalism.
We don't know how long we're recording for. Hey, well, so I have a present for you.
Is it a dead cat?
No. Remember when we did the episode where we very awkwardly begged for free stuff?
Yes.
So somebody named Michael. Are you here, Michael?
Hey, yeah. Michael.
Came by my booth earlier today and you wanted a Ferrari? So here's a Ferrari. He signed it for you.
Oh, wow. You know, Ferraris are collectible. I bet a mint in the box Ferrari. How many people have one of those?
Well, it's not mint because he signed it.
That's true. That's true.
He ruined the resale value of your Ferrari.
The Ferrari is mint. The box isn't.
Okay.
Well, that's really cool.
I mean, but it's a box signed by Michael.
By Michael. You know, we are kind of bougie, but the thing I'm not that bougie about is cars. So I do have a friend who legitimately collects Ferraris.
Yeah.
Right? I have a friend in the entertainment industry who does very well and collects Ferraris, and I have gone to a dinner with him where he pulled up in his Ferrari at the same time I pulled up in my 2009 minivan. And it's always fun. I'm not bougie about cars. Maybe I should be.
What car did you have in college? Because I remember we were all like, oh,
well,
he has a sports car.
I had a
car.
Toyota Celica.
Oh, but it was a convertible.
It was a convertible Toyota Celica, but it was 10 years old, and there was a rip because it had the soft top, and there was a rip in the soft top that I couldn't afford to get fixed yet. So I did like having a convertible. That was a good car.
When you grow up in Utah, even a crappy convertible is like, oh, okay then.
that's so bougie.
You're fancy.
Yeah, very fancy. But yeah, like Emily and I still joke about it. We're like, we go to these like swanky things. Like we go to like important things that all sorts of fancy people are at. And we just go to the valet in our minivan where the door doesn't work and it's...
You have to pay him extra to touch it.
Yeah, yeah. Meanwhile, I've actually been with my friend, his Ferrari, where he pulls up. And his question is, to the valets, do any of you know how to drive Ferraris? Because apparently there's like extra equipment. Like he literally did this and someone walked over and said, "You mean the paddle system? Yeah, I know how to use that." And he's like, "Great, you may park my Ferrari." And so like the valets have to apply to park the Ferrari.
Okay.
So
Brandon pulls up to a valet and says, "I don't have a tip, but you can eat all the French fries under the car seats in the back."
Now, I take exception to that. There are absolutely French fries under the car seat in the back. Well, there's no car seats anymore because the kids are older, but that has not stopped them from hiding, like...
From hiding French fries like, for later?
They stand up, like, "We didn't give you any food. How are there M&Ms all over, right? Like, we cleaned this yesterday and you haven't eaten in here." And they're like, "Oh, I don't know.
Excrete Skittles
yeah.
from my pores."
Parents, you know, right? Like, oh, but I will say this. I will say this. This is an aside to my aside to my aside. I'll get back to the original
Remember,
aside.
As he gives this aside, that this is an episode about book signings.
Yes. We were cleaning out our basement because we're getting new carpet. And the three boys each have, like, a battle station. They have their computer and all this stuff. And we move the whole battle station. We lift up we put the monitor down and just move the whole desk. It's a very sturdy desk with the computer in it, unplug the stuff and move it. And we move the youngest and it's like, you know, it's like a hurricane. Like when you see the pictures of what happens after a hurricane, except it's like multicolored. It's like just mess everywhere underneath his desk and everything. And we move the middle one, it's even worse. Right, this is Dallin, he's delightful, but he doesn't even notice. He could be to his neck in half-eaten popcorn kernels somehow, and he'd be like, "What mess?" Right?
Uh-huh.
We moved my eldest, and it was clean. He's 16, and he's like, "Yeah, you know, I started picking up around because it started looking gross." And I was like, "It's happening!" I never believed this day was possible. And he's like, "Yeah, I'm gonna take it over there and set it up." And he like took his own computer and knew how to go set it up. I didn't have to do anything for him. He just got it going, got on with his friends, started playing Apex. Like, you know, like all he had is just like, "Hey, we need to move the stuff." The other two are like, "Oh, we can't move the stuff." And like, so anyway, it does happen.
That's actually a really accurate impression of his children.
Yeah, yeah. So the aside was, the thing I take offense to, not that there's a bunch of stuff, I tip well, darn it.
He does tip well. I've eaten with him and I'm like, "Do you give enough tip?" And he does. He tips better than I do.
So.
And I tip pretty well.
So there we go.
Does your wife ever get mad at you for tipping too well? Because mine
no,
does.
No, but I have to push her. Like my wife, I don't know. My wife grew up in this very sort of frugal, pioneer heritage household.
Mm-hmm.
The sort of household, I joke that like she had to go sell coal as a child, but she didn't. But I mean, her mom made clothing for them, right?
Yeah.
And her mom, who does not necessarily like to bake, made bread every week because it's cheaper than buying bread. So you might as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Her dad built her house. Like he was a part-time builder and he got friends together and they built the house themselves for no money.
Like, authentic Amish barn
like
raising.
Total Amish barn raising type
Love
thing.
Love it.
In a prairie in the middle of nowhere, because that's where you could buy the land. Now it's all super expensive because, you know, all those prairies where you could buy land back then in Utah became bedroom communities for things. But like getting her to like spend money on anything has been a bit of a thing. Having her have to have after the Kickstarter. Where is she? We're cheering for Emily.
No.
Oh. I don't know what we're cheering for. But after the Kickstarter, when she had $45 million in her checking account, it was a very strange experience for her. Let's just say that. So, yeah.
See, my wife is the same way. She does not like spending money, which makes her very hard to buy gifts for because there's virtually nothing I can buy for her that she will appreciate more than me not buying anything. So,
yeah, that is a challenge.
It's hard.
Emily's gotten better as we've had a company because we can spend money on people and she's cool with that.
Yeah.
What she doesn't want us to do is spend money on things that we won't use, but spending money on people is fine. So I've gotten her to the point where she now tips like I do. and things like that and all these things. But talk to her sometime about it. It was hard for her to get used to this idea because she does not want to be seen as bougie. This is like, you know, and me, I love it. I've talked about it before. Me, I like a little pampering now and then.
Now and then.
So.
Hey, so book signings. I'm trying to think of what my worst book signing is. So first of all, there was the one in Sacramento, which maybe I'm just going to use that one because we already talked at length about it.
Have there ever been any incidents? Like, I've never had a book signing where something terrible happened. But I can imagine that, like, I mean, you could go there and there could be a fire or something like that. You ever had an experience like that?
I haven't had that.
Mary Robinette had the thing where she always has terrible flight delays whenever she's going to a book signing. And she actually came up with a hashtag for it, merry-go-round.
It's a drinking game on Twitter.
Yeah. If Mary Robinette's flight gets delayed, you get to take a drink.
Here's a weird story. This is not a catastrophe story. Mm-hmm. In fact, this is completely neutral. But I wear this hat, okay? This is my official author hat. You probably didn't recognize me when I took it off. It's Dan Wells. Actually, you all do because I never wear it on the show. But when I travel for book tours and stuff, I always have my hat. And everyone's always like, oh, that's an Indiana Jones hat. Except when I'm in Europe and they say, oh, it's a cowboy hat. Except when I'm in Baltimore, Maryland, and they say, oh, it's a Crocodile Dundee hat. So here's the thing. I've only signed in Baltimore once. This was not just one person. This was like seven different people. And I wonder if maybe like Crocodile Dundee was on TV last night, or I don't know why it was. Everyone who commented on the hat, it was a Crocodile Dundee hat. So
it does not look anything like an Akubra.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
It's starting to look more and more like one, the sweatier and grosser that it gets, though.
Well, that's how you can tell that it's like a real hat and not just a, I decided to wear a hat one day. Like,
yeah.
It fits you very well.
Oh, well, mm-hmm. He's definitely been camping in that hat he thinks looks nice. By the way, anyone expecting more to the story, that's the whole story. They all thought it was a Crocodile Dundee hat. End. Next story, which is this. I did early on for partials, I think. It might have been fragments. I did a big group tour with HarperCollins with three other YA authors. It was me. It was April Lynn Pike, who is out here selling books. Go buy one. It was S.J. Kincaid, who is one of my favorite science fiction cyberpunk authors. And Veronica Roth, who, you know, has more fans than the rest of us combined and multiplied. So we were in, I want to say San Diego, but it might have been L.A. And we were doing this big signing at this gargantuan Barnes & Noble. And we all had like two people each. And then the Veronica Roth line was 4 hours long. But you had to wait in the Veronica Roth line in order to get up to the other three of us.
Oh, yeah, because they do that at some of those.
Because they're like, nope, you got to wait in line. And so we were sitting there, and I was getting bored, and I went to go find my friend, Izzy. Izzy went to college with us. One of the few people who went to college with us that doesn't work at Dragonsteel.
Yep.
And
she's in Yumi and the Nightmare Painter.
Yeah, she mm-hmm. is?
Yep.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So I went and found her in the line, and I was like, hey, you want to come to dinner with the other authors and I after this? We're going to go to sushi. And she's like, yeah, that sounds great. And then I went back and I sat down. And apparently she spent the next 4 hours in the line, like, saying, no, I don't know Veronica Roth. No, yes, I am going to dinner with her, but it's an accident. I don't know how. Stop asking me questions about Veronica Roth. And so I thought that was funny. None of them thought that was funny. I thought that was funny.
I actually think that is miserable because I've been in that situation at those, so at San Diego Comic Con, mm-hmm. where you have to, like, everybody has to wait in line, right? San Diego's great, but we were there with George Martin, and we were in that same line, and it's just like, and it's uncomfortable for everyone because they walk past you, and you're like, sorry, I don't know your book, sorry, oh, they look great, sorry, like mm-hmm. all the fans, and then they, you know, George at the end signing their books, right? And it's just like, why would you do this to both the fans and us, have them all walk past us? Like, yeah. Anyway, by the way, real life Izzy is not as weird as book Izzy. Okay. I ought to say that, but yeah.
Which I need to read Yumi now because real life Izzy is pretty weird.
Yes, she is.
She's awesome. The very first writing excuses group signing we did, that was Howard and I with your giant line, which is why we never did any other writing excuses group signings.
One of my first signings at a convention was next to Anne McCaffrey.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I signed one book, and then there was Anne McCaffrey's line. But they didn't have to, like, all wait in line and walk past me.
Mm-hmm.
They did just get to sit in their line and look over at me, sitting there going...
See, the Brandon in his natural habitat.
Yes.
I did a signing sitting next to Robert McCammon once.
Okay.
And that was very much, they're all here for him. I'll just wave.
Yeah, you know what? It doesn't happen to me these days anymore, but somewhat recently it has happened to me. It was maybe 10 years ago, or less than 10 years ago.
Okay.
Because it's post A Memory of Light, when my books were taking off legitimately on their own, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is maybe 6-7 years ago. It's in Spain. Spain has a fantastic convention, Celsius 232, which is Fahrenheit 451 just in Celsius. It's a really clever title.
Do they translate the title of the book in Spanish?
What's that? I don't know. But the convention is just named that as a joke.
Okay.
It's a fantastic. And Spain is the first country I went to out of the United States on tour. My publisher there was great. They still are, but he is retired. Same publisher, but different editor. They're just fantastic. They really supported my books right from the get-go. And so I had been going to Spain. And by this point, I had built quite a fan base in Spain. And I had been to Celsius multiple times. And so I had just a huge following in Spain. And this year I was there with Pat Rothfuss.
Meaning the year of the story, not 2023.
Yeah, the year of the story. And back then people weren't quite so angry at him. The second book was fairly new, right? It had been out for a couple of years. And I went to Spain and I'm like, you know, in the U.S., usually Pat has a bigger line than me. But here... I'm going to have, you know, a...
Yeah.
And so I was walking with Pat, and I'm like, well, you know, I've been spending a lot of time in Spain. I'm like, I'm getting him ready for the idea that I'm going to have the longer line. And we saw my line, and it was huge.
Yeah.
But then we stepped around the corner, and his line lapped mine a whole cycle. And he's like, oh, by the way, Sanderson, I'm the god of Spain. And he was in his 42nd printing in Spain. It's just, for whatever reason...
Like- Yeah. One in four people in Spain had read.
Yeah. They had sold enough books that it was in one of four households. And I'm like, of course. The place that I have started to take off overseas is also the place that is the Pat. So there's always a bigger fish.
If I'd have been able to take you to, like, Bolivia 6 years ago, I might have beaten you.
Yeah, well,
but
I mean...
these days, no.
If any of us went next to the Fourth Wing author, Rebecca Yarrow, today...
Nothing.
And then politicians blow us all out of the water, right? So...
Excuse me, Zero G outsold Michelle Obama for 1 week.
Michelle Obama's book being the best-selling audiobook of all time?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Except for that 1 week. When she was number two and I was number one on Audible.
That is quite the distinction. Yeah, I remember the first time I beat, like, Dan Brown, and Dan Brown was number two to me. Now, the thing about this is, and this was probably the same with you, Dan Brown's book had been out for 12 weeks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right?
This was months into
and
her.
And my book came out, and his was number two, and I was number one, and I'm like, I'm taking it. It's like, he's been in the boxing match and has defeated 11 opponents and is bloody and stumbling, and I came in, and I'm like, pow, sucker punched him, took number one. I eventually got to the point where I could compete with him on opening week, but the first time I could not.
My 1 week as a New York Times bestseller was the Partial series on the series list, and I was number nine. Number 10 was Rick Riordan, Lightning Thief. So I sold better than him for 1 week.
For 1 week.
Ha-ha! Take that! Is it Riordan? I always said Riordan. Is it Riordan? Is it Riordan?
I have never met him, but Community Del says he's super nice, so someday, hopefully.
Okay. Someday we'll meet him.
We should probably...
And I'm gonna rub it in his face.
We should probably end here. Is Ben here? Is Ben here anywhere? We don't have today. Ben didn't come to the...
I think Ben will appear as if by magic.
Mm.
He's going to leap out of this stage like Psy from
last time he came and bugged us. But I think we should probably end here. So
okay.
How's that not, Ben?